All right, Queens, I'm so excited for my guest today because Summer Innanen has been such a huge part of my journey to food freedom and self-love. So those of you that don't know her, I'm going to read her bio out for you. So Summer Innanen is a professionally trained coach specializing in body image, self-worth, and confidence. She is the host of the podcast Eat the Rules, which has almost 2 million downloads, by the way. And creator of You on Fire, an online group coaching program dedicated to helping people get free from body shame. She also co-runs the Body Image Coach Certification Program with Danny Adams to train professionals to be better equipped with clients around body image. She helps people all over the world to stop living behind the numbers on their scales through her private and group coaching at summerinnanen.com. So, Summer, without further ado, welcome to the Body Love Binge podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
You are so welcome. As I was saying before we hit record, I'm very excited for this. So I would like to start off with 10 fun quick fire questions just to get the
Sure.
ball rolling. So number one, if you could swap lives with any fictional character for a day, who would it be and why?
Oh, like I've got to think about that. A fictional character. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I mean, for one day, I'd go back to Beverly Hills 90210 and I'd want to be Brenda Walsh for a day.
Love that.
Just for fun.
These
Live
aren't
out
really
my
quick
teen
fire.
dreams.
I love that somewhere. Okay, number two, what's the weirdest food combination you love if you have a weird food combination?
Yeah, so sometimes I like toast with peanut butter and then eggs on top.
Oh yeah, that's weird, in
Yeah.
my opinion.
Yeah, my husband thinks it's weird. I like sweet and salty,
Yeah,
savory.
I'll try that. Number three, if you had to listen to one song on repeat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh gosh. Probably something by Arcade Fire. Probably like what's it called? I'm forgetting the name of the song. Suburbs by Arcade Fire.
I've not heard that, but I'm going to go on Spotify and check it out.
It's a good one.
Yes. Number four, what's the most spontaneous thing you've ever done and did it turn out well?
Yes. So probably deciding to move to Vancouver. We did that really spontaneously almost 10 years ago, and it worked out amazingly well.
Amazing. What's the weather like over there at this point in recording, which is February?
It is very much like the UK, so lots of rain, lots of gray, but not too cold. And we have amazing summers, and spring starts now, so flowers are already coming up, which in Canada, in like normally I'm from the East Coast, like that doesn't usually happen till April or May. So that's why I moved out here, because it's a much shorter, warmer winter.
That's beautiful. Although in the UK, we do, well, I live in Holland, but I'm British. We do get nice summers, but it's not always guaranteed. So it sounds like you have the
We
guaranteed.
have much better summers than you, yes, but our winters are comparable.
That's
Yeah.
worth knowing. Okay, number five, if you could have any animal in the world as a pet and it would be magically tame, what would you choose?
A sloth.
Oh, how cool.
I
That's so
love them.
fun and random. Okay, number six, what's the most unusual job you can imagine yourself doing for a day just to experience it?
I think I would want to be a marine biologist. Yeah. Something in the ocean.
Yeah. And number seven, if you were to write an autobiography today, what would the title be?
My husband and I joke about this all the time because he says your autobiography would be called, I Just Have to Go Pee Before We Go.
That is a great one. I can resonate.
That's me.
Love that. I'll be the first to buy, Summer. So feel free to write. Okay, number eight. Oh, I'm putting you on the spot here. What's your favorite dad joke or pun that never fails to make you laugh?
I think that, oh God, I'm gonna have to think about that. But we do a lot of dad jokes around here because I have a 5-year old.
No.
What's an example of one? I need to prime my brain. It's hard for me to be on the spot with
I
things.
was thinking if I was asked this question, I would be so shit and I would say, why did the chicken cross the road to get to the other side? Which is
Oh.
boring. It's funny because it's like ridiculously. That's just my weird sense of humor, which is not, that's not even funny, let's be honest.
Yeah, so we have a riddle book, and one of the other ones is why did the chicken cross the playground? And it's to get to the other slide.
Oh, that's almost as good. Love
We'll use
that.
that one.
We'll
We'll
use
go
that
with that one.
one. Okay, number nine. If you could time travel to any era, you've mentioned this previously, for one day, what fashion trend would you want to rock?
Oh, I'd go back to, so I grew up in the 80s, but I was a kid, so I would go back to the 80s, but I'd want to be like in the, like I'd want to be like a able to go to like the club scene and go to and be like kind of like hair metal, like that type of thing. Yeah.
Awesome. And last but not least of the 10 quick fire questions, what do you want people to take away from the conversation we're about to have?
Yeah, I think just hopefully some different ways of thinking about accepting your body that maybe you hadn't considered before.
Great. I would love to start off with the quote that's on your website. And there's another quote that I'm going to share of yours that changed my entire life. The first quote on your website is, "What if your perfect body was the one you're in today?" So I'd like you to speak to that in a moment, but I just want to share this quote before I forget. I'm probably paraphrasing here. It might not be your exact one, but you said at some point you weren't born just to give men a boner.
Yeah. Yes. We're not here to, our purpose on this earth is not to give some guy named Chad on the internet a boner. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
I
believe
remember
it
exactly where I was when I was
was
listening to you saying that on this in this field, and I stopped and I was like, oh my God, my whole life is now changed because I had this pattern of needing to be sexually attractive for men. And when you
Yes.
said it so bluntly, I was like, everything just shifted for me. It was really cool.
That's so funny. That's that I love hearing that. That's great. Yeah, it's a good perspective, right? Because it's
Yeah.
true. We're not that's not what our purpose. I mean, maybe it is your purpose, which is fine. But I think for a lot of us, it's taking us away from our true values and purpose.
Definitely. So thank you for those, Summer. Thank you
You're
greatly.
welcome.
So I would love you to talk to what if your perfect body was the one you were in today? I know that's like such a big thing to talk about, but let me start with this then. How can we start to love who we are and enjoy being in our bodies when we don't necessarily like the way it looks in the mirror?
Yeah, so I feel like those can be separate things. So I actually encourage people to not aim to like what they see in the mirror and instead really build up a solid sense of self-worth so that your appearance doesn't matter so much anymore. So I think we all have parts of ourselves that we perhaps don't really give too much thought to, that we maybe don't like so much, but it doesn't make or break us. It doesn't impact us emotionally. So for example, like maybe it's like your fingernails or the fact that you're like not a good parallel parker. Like you can we can accept those things and live with it, and it's fine. It doesn't change, how we feel about ourselves as a whole, but for some reason, seeing our reflection in the mirror defines who we are. So the basis of my work is about divesting from that and really unhooking those two things so that your entire sense of self-worth is really tied to who you are as a person instead of how you look. So I don't know if that answers your question exactly, but I think it will hopefully give people hope that, it's great if you can look in the mirror and like what you see. But I would never put that as an expectation that that needs to be a constant thing. I think it's more about, I want you to be able to look in the mirror, maybe like it, maybe not, but just be able to go on about your day and not have it be a concern in your mind. And so that's really the work that I do is just getting to a bit more of like a neutral emotional reaction when we see ourselves, because we're gonna change. Our bodies are gonna change. We're gonna age. And so if we're wanting to really, like how we look in the mirror, then we have to kind of ask ourselves, well, then what's the expectation that I'm setting for myself? And is it to match a certain beauty standard, or is it to kind of fit within like some sort of box. And if that's the case, then, that's maybe not going to be the most helpful because you're going to move outside of that, especially as we age. And so trying to just completely divest from that idea can actually be quite liberating.
Absolutely. That's what's given me the most freedom to separate my self-worth and happiness from what my body looks like. And it
Yes.
took a, it's been a journey and it's always ongoing, but I now look in the mirror and some days I'm like loving what I'm seeing and some days I'm not. And I'm like, oh, well, this is the way my body looks today. I'll just get on with my day because it doesn't really matter so much anymore. That's very freeing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. 100%. And I mean, everybody's experience is going to be different. Like I come from a place of privilege. I'm in a straight size body. I don't experience weight discrimination. I don't experience racial discrimination. There's all these other things where that can make it more challenging for us to really feel neutral. And so that's not to say it's not possible, but I always like to just say that, especially when I talk about this or I talk about my own personal experience with it, because it's definitely easier for someone like you or someone like me who holds a lot of privilege in certain areas to be more accepting of it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you spoke to that because I've recovered in a normal size body too from all the eating disorders, and some people don't, and that there is that weight discrimination, and that's not okay. And in my coaching, we talk about it, and I'm sure in yours too, because when you feel that you're connected to yourself and you love and accept yourself as you are, the outside world doesn't have the same emotional impact on you as perhaps it does before you do all the inner work and come back home to self-love, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, but it can still be challenging. And I think
Mm.
that's the tough part. If you go out in the world and you experience, discrimination at the doctor's office, it's like, yeah, you might be more resilient to it, but I think that there's still, and I can't speak for everybody's individual experience, but from all the work I've done over the years, it still hurts, right, to experience something like that, of course, which makes perfect sense. Of course it would.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think it's so important to have allies in this. And it's growing. This body positive and self-love movement is growing. And I'm so grateful to see that. But yeah, the more people we can have around us that are supporting us, and as thin white women, we can also support a bigger cause and spreading the love that way and doing all we can for each other.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other thing too that's important to really recognize is that, it's not our fault that we feel this way. It's our culture that's made us feel this way. And so that's an important part of the process too, is being able to say like, okay, maybe I had this experience at the doctor's office, but it's not, instead of internalizing it as there being something wrong with me, we're able to externalize it and say, okay, there's something wrong with this culture and with the medical system, that it has such a huge focus on weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to body image and being okay with ourselves regardless of how we look. For me personally, it was, I didn't realize this until I started the work. It was a cover up, a way to cope with feelings that were underneath that I didn't know were there. So can you speak about that? Like, how can body image, how can dieting and trying to control our bodies actually be covering up something that's going on at a deeper level that perhaps we might not even be aware of?
Yeah, so body shame and turning to dieting are often coping mechanisms, much like other things can be coping mechanisms, like using alcohol or something like that, or numbing out on social media. And so I think that we just don't see it that way because a lot of us haven't made that connection. But if we really look at the moments where we're having acute body shame, and ask ourselves, what else might be going on in my life right now? What other emotions am I experiencing? Oftentimes, we can start to connect the dots and realize that there's other emotions that are potentially driving us to hyperfixate on our body. And the reason we do that is because our body is something we can fix, or we think we can fix, right? Like it's a distraction. So I'll give just a personal example to put this into perspective. But when my dad passed away, like 4.5 years ago now, I started to experience like these moments of where I was like fixating on my body again, like a couple weeks after he had passed away. And I remember like kind of standing in the shower and being like, why am I thinking about my body? Like I haven't, kind of gone down this rabbit hole in such a long time. And then I was like, oh, like I'm experiencing, some of the most intense grief that I've ever experienced in my life. And so I'm reverting back to this really old coping mechanism because it was a way for me to almost like distract myself from sitting with all the discomfort of this grief and all of this overwhelm of, all the other kind of stuff that was happening around his death. And so that's what we do. And that's kind of an extreme example because it's very acute, but it can even happen with like your job is really stressful. Maybe it feels kind of out of control. So we turn to it kind of translates into like us fixating on our body and thinking like, okay, dieting, I'm going to focus on dieting because it's going to give me a sense of control. It's going to give me a sense of hope. It's going to like distract me from these other uncomfortable emotions that I'm experiencing. And so sometimes it's hard to like really notice that that's happening. And I think that's one of the things that oftentimes when people hear this, they're like, no, it actually is about my body. The issue is my body. And sometimes like it is about our body, right? Like sometimes it just is shame that we're carrying about our body. But in these moments where we're sort of having like these, sort of dips where we're having a more like acute sense of body shame, or we're feeling these urges to diet, it's always a really good idea to get curious about what else might be driving that, because there's often something else there, and the dieting is just a really good distraction. It's a, it's just, it's coping. It's like, and for a lot of us, that's how we learn to cope. We learn to cope with the discomfort within our bodies by dieting. And so, it can happen continually if we don't start to recognize that. And what's powerful about recognizing it is we can then create that separation to know that our body is not the problem. We can be able to say like, my body's not the problem here. The problem is actually that I'm experiencing this other stress in this other area of my life.
Yeah, that's very powerful because I did that time and time again without realizing I was doing that. And then when I did realize I was doing that, it was almost like I was chasing the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And you mentioned the word hope. So if my life wasn't going to plan and I was experiencing challenging emotions, if I focused on changing my body or at least trying to, there was that hope there that when I get thinner, then apparently my whole life's going to be perfect. Because we're sold this, aren't we? Everyone's going to love me. I'm going to be accepted. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to be rich and everything's going to be perfect. And that's not true either. But it brings that hope in the moment until you realize. How many times do you have to have that false sense of hope only to fail and to feel even worse about yourself and then to say, like, enough is enough?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and you can see it then working as a protective response because we're, our brain is just looking for some sort of a solution to the discomfort that we're experiencing. And unfortunately, it's looking at a solution that actually creates more of a problem, but it feels like a good temporary fix. And that's what makes it so hard to break free from, is that it does just feel like, well, if I do this, I will feel better. But we all know how that ends. And usually you feel good for a little bit and then it all comes crashing down.
Exactly. And the biggest lesson I learned is improving your body image isn't losing weight. They're two very different things. Because most people lose weight and then they feel better in their body and they feel more confident and all these things. And so they think that in order to feel better, then the answer is weight loss. Of course, the answer is never weight loss, in my opinion, to feel better in your body. So, how can we start to actually feel better or be more accepting, more neutral in the bodies we have when we perhaps are really struggling with a lot of body shame to do with the way our physical bodies look?
Yeah, so I mean there's so many things that you can do, right? So but I think like I mentioned a core of it is really starting to understand the connection between those feelings about our body and what we're making it mean about ourselves, so our sense of self-worth, right? And so really asking ourselves like, well, what is, when we experience this shame, what is it that it's making us believe about ourselves? Is it making you believe that you're a failure, that you don't belong, that you're not good enough. There's some sort of, belief in us that it's really activating. And when we can do the work to try to pull that out, that's where we can start to see that changing my body isn't going to change that belief. Like changing your body isn't going to change this belief that you have that you're a failure or that you don't belong. It might feel like it does a little bit, but it doesn't. That belief is still there because beliefs are separate from our body size. They live within us, not outside of us. And so that's where, like, I, think that the deeper work around really uncovering those beliefs and recognizing that so many of them obviously come from the messages that we've received about bodies and what body size means, but they've also generally been reinforced by experiences that we've had throughout our, throughout our life. So they become reinforced and, they become stronger. And the issue is really that, like, if we don't do that work, though, it's going to show up in another area. And so what I mean by that is, maybe you get to a better place, where a place where you feel a little bit better in your body, but if you still are really holding this belief that, like, I'm not good enough, then it might show up in your relationship, it might show up in your career, like it's going to show up somewhere else. And so that's why, I really look at it as more of an issue around self-worth, because if we can really just believe that, you're good enough and you're valuable to this world just as you are, without checking off any kind of external boxes, then the concerns about your body tend to become a lot quieter. And I know that sounds like a simple formula, and it's not at all. There's many other elements to it. I think when I talk about self-worth, I really look at self-worth from the perspective of, one, knowing who you are, and secondly, knowing that who you are is valuable and worthy. And so the work is really around knowing who you are. So knowing, like, what your values are, what your purpose is, because a lot of us have just identified with a body size, and then knowing that who you are is valuable and worthy. So on top of that, like, changing that internal dialogue, changing those beliefs. And so when I work with people, it's really looking at kind of those two components of self-worth and doing all the work around that.
Yeah, I love all of that. And I followed your work, of course. And a big thing for me was taking action, even if it was uncomfortable, taking action as the confident version of me. And then you build that evidence, don't you? That, okay, so I can go to the party and wear the tight dress and be uncomfortable, but practice being in the present and having a good time. And then your brain's like, oh, one piece of evidence that you can actually do life in the body you have without waiting till you've lost so many pounds or I'll be happy when fill in the blank, because it's happening
Yeah,
now.
exactly. Yeah, I think what that is really referring to is just, being inside of our comfort zone. A lot of us have kind of made this very small comfort zone for ourselves where, we won't wear certain things outside the house, or we'll only go outside the house with makeup, or we won't say no to people because we don't want to hurt their feelings, because the thought of doing any of those things brings up a lot of anxiety or fear. And so, yeah, like, slowly taking steps outside your comfort zone. And the way I like to position that is to just take baby steps, because if we take too huge of a step, then you might have an experience where you do have really bad fear or anxiety, and then you're like, I never want to do that again because that was so awful. So taking little baby steps where, maybe it's like, okay, you just wear the dress around your house when no one else is home. Or you wear a sweater over the dress, or a blazer, or something, like something that feels a little bit scary, but not too scary, like a 3 out of 10 or a 4 out of 10 instead of a 10 out of 10 in terms of, like, a fear scale. And so that's where we can be better equipped to set ourselves up for success when we look at building confidence. And that's what that does. And so the more that we take those little action steps, the greater our self-confidence can feel, and also, like, the larger our comfort zone gets. So instead of it sort of being this really small comfort zone, it starts to expand because we start to realize like, okay, like I can do this thing. It's not scary. It's kind of like public speaking. It's like, of course it feels terrifying the first time you do it, but after you've done it, 10 times, 20 times, it just feels like, an old pair of underwear that you throw on. Like it's like no big deal. And so it's all stretched in. And so that's kind of what that, to your point, like when you talk about building confidence, I always like to just add that, clarification, because I don't want people just like, well, I better wear a bikini and just go to the beach. It's like, no, if that feels terrifying, like that's not a good idea. Like, let's find something that feels maybe tiny bit, gets you a little bit anxious, but nothing that's going to be like absolutely terrifying, because then you might never want to do it again.
I agree with that. And I have, yeah, there's my little diagram with the your comfort zone, your stretch zone, your panic zone. You don't want to
Oh,
be in your panic zone because then you've
that's perfect.
re-traumatized yourself, right? So we want to be like here.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Zone gets bigger, so I'm definitely on board with that. I want to talk about fear of judgment from others because, and I guess this is all intertwined, obviously, but let's say someone is getting better at feeling good in their body, in their own house, like around family, around friends, and then when they go out into the real world and they're worried about strangers, because people do judge people on the basis of size and it's not okay. So it's like not pretending that it doesn't happen because it does. People start to be okay with the fact that, not a definite fact, but with the potential knowing that someone might be judging them on the basis of their size.
Yeah, it's tough, right? I think that like it hurts. I mean, I feel like you can be the most confident person in the world and it can still really shake you if someone's gonna criticize you to your face about something. But so I just want to normalize that, like we don't want to pretend we're robots, that we're just going to be bulletproof to any sort of criticism or judgments. Like, we're human beings, we're sensitive, we have parts of ourselves that are going to feel more impacted if somebody, makes a particular comment or judgment. But I think that, there's a few ways that we can mitigate it. One is like, where we can, looking to set boundaries. So if it's with your mother or something like that, then thinking about different ways to advocate for yourself, or to have like an exit plan, or to, have a way to say like, hey, I it's not okay that you say something like that to me. And if it's just kind of like, out in the world and it's like a random stranger and you're, they make a comment about you or something like that. Like, that's where I think that, having a really good support system that you can process some that experience with somebody, and being really compassionate with yourself and really trying to see that, whatever their judgment is really just a reflection of their own beliefs and values and not of who you are as a person. And so, that's why, having a really good solid sense of, what you value and who you are can help to make you more resilient in the face of any kind of judgment and criticism. So if someone came up to me and said like, Summer, you're really ugly, like it probably wouldn't bother me. Like, I might be like, well, you're a jerk, but I feel like I've done enough work to just be like, okay, well, I don't care, like, because that's not an important value of mine anymore. But if they came up to me and said like, hey, Summer, like you're a really horrible person and you don't treat people very well, you're not a very good friend, like that would actually really hurt me. And maybe there's something in there that I do need to get curious about, like in terms of like, oh, have I done something? Like, where can I do better? Because it's a value that I actually have in terms of standing up for justice and things like that. But when it comes to appearance, like, it's not something I value anymore. So if you're going to criticize me, it's not going to really bother me very much. So I think that it's also about knowing where our sensitive spots are and doing some exploration around those, and getting to know like what our real values are in ourselves, in order to for there to be less weight associated, like weight pun intended, I guess, but weight associated with someone's comments if they're directed towards our appearance or our body. I don't know if that answered your question, but
Yeah, and more so thank you. I got a lot from that. And
well,
if you're comfortable, I would love to go into intimacy with between two people, because again, this was a big one for me, like not wanting anyone, well, anyone, my partner, to see my body, hiding away, like quickly getting dressed, all these things. How would you help a client whose partner outwardly shared that they don't find the person attractive anymore because of the weight they've gained? I mean, apart from that being incredibly painful for the person receiving that, how would you move forward with that and then create an intimacy knowing that diets don't work, the body can't be changed, and it's like a two-way kind of thing that needs to be happening, not just the individual?
Yeah, honestly, couples therapy 100%. I would if I had a client come to me, I would say couples therapy because there is generally something deeper going on there. That said, I will just speak to attraction for a moment. Like our attraction is really conditioned, you know? Like we're what we see as attract what we've been conditioned to see as attractive in our society is really what we've been exposed to in terms of like, for example, the media. So, that's how we build up our sense of, you know, what we find attractive, but that's all changeable. You know, that's if you start to expose yourself to, you know, diverse body types, eventually you'll see other body types as attractive or, you know, different races as attractive, you know, and things like that. And so I think that it's the it's, you know, I don't know if I'd necessarily, it depends on the dynamic. Like if a client came to me and was like, this happened, I would be like, you know, what do you feel comfortable having a conversation with your partner? Like, what is this bringing up for you? Like, those are the things I'd want to explore. But I, in terms of like, if someone experienced that, I really want them to know that, you know, attractive, what we're attracted to is changeable. And so if their partner is willing to put in the work to change that, then they can.
Yes.
But I think that that can be like such a vulnerable, to be on the receiving end of that, like for example, if you're the person and your partner said, like, I'm not attracted to you because of your weight change, like that's such a painful experience. And I think that there might be a different reason. Like there might be a different dynamic going on. That's why I suggest like couples therapy for something like that, because part of me would question whether it really is just about the physical appearance and not something else that's going on. That's just me being a, you know, therapist in training. So
For sure.
but who just I actually just completed my sex therapy course. So this is like
Oh,
good
so
question,
cool.
good timing. But you know, in like if the person, if the partner is willing to work on it, like there's other ways to express intimacy that don't have to involve nudity, that don't have to involve sex. And so it can just be like, can you try to find intimacy in different ways while you work through this issue? You know, maybe it's like, can we just like hold hands when we watch TV, or can we have a vulnerable conversation? Like intimacy is also born through conversations that we have and just being really vulnerable with one another. And so there's other ways to build intimacy in a relationship without it being about like getting naked and having sex. And I think that that's an important thing because we put pressure on ourselves to you know, to be able to like have sex with the lights on. And that's great if you can do that. But I would say that if that feels so terrifying for you, again, it's like, let's find these little baby steps to work us towards this position where maybe we can feel a little bit more comfortable and still be able to honor this desire for intimacy that we have. And so, yeah, again, I don't know if that answers your question. I feel like I sort of go off on different
Oh, I love
tangents.
it. I could just listen to you talk forever. It's really helpful because what it's brought up something to share, which has really helped me in my journey. And that's for me to look at women my size or bigger on Instagram every day. And I still do that when my schedule allows me to just sit on Instagram for 10 minutes or so, because I set boundaries with my phone. It still feels great because you're almost giving yourself a permission slip that we don't need to just be okay with being who you are, especially when you see women similar who look like they're just confident and loving their life. Something happens. It's like this kind of magical shift that you have, similar to what you said, that you can almost train yourself to see beauty in other things other than what we've been conditioned to see it in.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. And that's exactly it. And so like if if your partner's willing to do that, then there's an opening for them to have that change happen within themselves too. As well, I think there's education that needs to be done on the fact that like dieting, doesn't work. And what's more important to them, like having a partner that's starving and miserable, or to have a partner that is in a bigger body but comfortable and confident and and is well nourished, So like I think that's where like having someone to help navigate that discussion would always be a little bit more helpful, I think, if someone was put in that situation, which it's happened. I've had clients that has unfortunately happened too. And then I've had the opposite where the person gained weight and the partner was like so happy just because the other person was so much like they weren't starving themselves and dieting anymore. And so I want people to understand that like, doesn't always happen in a negative way. Like if your body changes, like my partner, like, he's like, this is so much better, than it was before.
I had that experience too, and I have shared this on my podcast before, but it's worth sharing again for any new listeners, because this really helped me to see myself from a different lens. So when I met my now husband, I was like, what, 30 pounds lighter than I was now, in fully in the eating disorder. And when we met and when I moved in with him, he would say, you're perfect, your body's perfect, you're perfect. Fast forward 2 to 3 years into recovery, I'm 30 pounds heavier. He would say the same thing, your body's perfect, you're perfect. So I asked him an intimate question, and I said, I'm really curious how you say these words to me, and I want to believe them, but you also said them to me when I was like half the size I am now. So can you explain to me like what's going on for you when you say my body's perfect in particular? And he sat there and he looked up and he was like, that is a great question. And he said, the only answer I have for you is it's just you. It's your energy. It's your vibe. You've got the same shape body. It's just shaped bigger, which he loves because he likes curves. And all he could say was, it's just all of who you are, your expression, your sexual energy. Like, and that helped me to see myself for more than just a body, which is a great book, by the way, isn't it? More Than a Body by the twins, Lexi and Katie Kite, I think it is. Let's see, Lindsay Kite.
Yes, I always say the wrong name. So I'm like, I'm gonna put you in charge of saying the names. I always get one of them
Know
mixed
it's
up.
Kite, the surname. Lexi and Lindsay, I think.
I think you're right.
So it's our essence. We're not just our bodies.
And that's why like really, your partner should love you unconditionally. And I think that when they don't, there's something else going on there.
I agree with that. So let's move from intimacy to pregnancy then. It's one of the questions you wrote down that you'd like to be asked, and I think it's really worth bringing this up. The unrealistic and oppressive expectations around pregnancy, motherhood. Can you speak to that? I'm not a mother myself. I coach many mothers, and the pressure to fit back into those genes and all that bollocks, it's still there, isn't it?
It's terrible. It's really bad. So I think that it's actually starts happening like in pregnancy, which is the frightening part, because what's embedded into a lot of pregnancy discourse is this idea that you shouldn't gain too much weight, and that you should be like quote unquote watching what you eat when you're pregnant. And to me, that's like such a dangerous thing because you're essentially putting like your fetus on a diet if you're restricting food or you're being conscious of calories when you are pregnant. And then, so we have that happening even when you're pregnant. So even when you're in this like really vulnerable time, although I would say postpartum is probably even more vulnerable because you're like so sleep deprived, but they're both vulnerable times. You're in this vulnerable time and there's all this pressure, and depending on the person, like you can, there's it's such a huge difference in terms of how much weight you might gain when you're pregnant. And like it's out of our control, much like kind of eating disorder recovery. Like it's out of our control in terms of how much weight you might gain. And so with postpartum, like there's this bounce back culture, as we call it, quote unquote, that you are, you're praised, you're amazing. Look at her, she's already back in her jeans. Oh my God, you're already so tiny. It's only been 2 months. Like all of this dialogue can be extremely damaging when you're going through a time that's probably when you feel like one of the most like emotionally messy times of your life. At least I'll speak for myself personally there. And so, what I think is really important is trying to build up resiliency before you have the baby. And there's a lot of the same steps that we can take, right? So changing your social media feed, like making sure there's a lot of good accounts now that show fat pregnancies, that show postpartum bodies that are not just like, the ones that they show where the person looks like they didn't have a baby. And so you can do a lot of that work. Sorry, I just have to blow my nose. Excuse me. So yeah, so you can do a lot of that work to kind of like build resiliency and make sure that you're, like deleting any pages that cause you to feel bad about yourself. In addition, like don't expect your body to go back to what it was before. Like I think even just having that expectation can then create that internal conflict within ourselves. So really trying to surrender that, you know what, your body's going to do what it's going to do. It's going to do what it's going to do during pregnancy, and it's going to do what it's going to do in postpartum. And to try to really focus more on like just caring for yourself as a whole. So trying to get some time to yourself, trying to get some sleep as best you can, which is really, really difficult. Really being in tune with your emotions, because what happens is in the postpartum time frame, your hormones are completely like bonkers, and you're absolutely sleep deprived, and those two things coming together can really create a lot of mood disorders like anxiety or depression, which can also then manifest as like a lot of body shame. And even if it's not like a clinical, depression or anxiety, there's still just like your emotions are all over the place. And like we talked about before, what's a really good coping mechanism to fixate on our bodies. And so I think like trying to create that separation where we can say, okay, this is not about my body. Like I'm going through one of the most difficult, vulnerable time periods in my life. And it makes sense that I would fixate on my body, but changing my body isn't going to change that. And like, what are some other ways that I can get support in order to get through this time frame and be kinder to yourself, because your body just did this amazing thing. Like it literally just built a spine and a liver and kidneys, and like, and we don't appreciate that. It's like we're just like, well, you should just look the way you did before, And that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm so grateful that I had done this work before I had a child, because I think that, I mean, I didn't even, when I'm back in my hardcore dieting days, when I hated my body, I didn't even want to get pregnant. I was like, I would never get pregnant because it would change my body, which is even more ridiculous, but that's how disordered I was. And so, it's really important to like be conscious of these things and start putting in the work before you actually have a child, I think, if you can, and that can be extremely rewarding.
And then also what you're going to be modeling to your child. Too.
Yeah, exactly. Which gets weaponized in our culture as like, I've seen ads that say, be a good role model to your child, like go on this diet.
Oh my
And
gosh.
like, yeah, it's like, no, that's the actually like the absolute worst thing you could do to be a role model. And watching babies is really interesting because you can see that they don't hate their body. They love their body. They think their body's awesome. And so it's interesting to see, like, that's how we're born into this world. And it's only because of these messages that we receive in our culture that then get reinforced, that we start to feel differently. And so if we can almost, observe your baby or observe your child and be like, oh, it's interesting how much they, when they look in the mirror, they laugh and they smile and they like themselves. It's like, yeah, that's how we used to be, and we can try to get back to that as best we can.
Yes, it's our natural essence to love ourselves, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I was going to ask for tips, but they can sign up to your 10-day confidence makeover for free anyway. So I'll leave the tips for them to be found there. But is there anything that I've not asked you, Summer, that you would like to share?
I feel like we've covered a lot of stuff. So, I mean, I could talk about a million different things, but I feel like that was good.
Yeah, I think we're good. And then if you can share with us how and what they can sign up for to get in touch with your work, and are you taking on clients, and how do you work with people? And do you work with women and men?
So majority of my clients are women or non-binary. So the best place to find me is if you go to the bodyimagecoach.com. That's my website. And really there's two kind of legs of my business, I guess. So one of them is like directly coaching and supporting individuals, and mostly through my group program, You on Fire, which is enrolling people on an ongoing basis. Every few weeks, I open up enrollment so people can check that out if they want support. As well, I work with providers. So I work with dietitians, therapists, other coaches, personal trainers, doctors. We have a doctor in our program right now in our Body Image Coach
Yay.
certification program. And that I run with my partner, Danny Adams, and we teach providers how to support clients with body image issues through a social justice perspective. And so I have a freebie that's for providers that's called the Body Image Roadmap for Professionals, which is just gives you a roadmap of how you can support clients with body image. And then for people who are not providers, they can get the free 10-day body confidence makeover. And anyone can listen to my podcast, Eat the Rules. I feel like it's kind of geared towards both providers as well as individuals.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Summer, for your time and your wisdom today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I
Yeah,
really.
thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much. And listeners, I love you, and I will see you next week. Bye.